from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't. He ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interviews.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interview. I know.
On 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. Cause I make you ugly. As soon as it drops, we're on a rampage. Bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble and dust, cause we'll be crushing it up. Somebody say,
you better run. Yeah. It's an earthquake. Up in here. Yeah. It's an earthquake. Up in here.
Everybody, happy Monday. Oh, and we have an eventful Monday. Let's see, Jeffrey, you want to hear some of the news today? In addition to the fairly significant national news we had yesterday over the Daily Memphian, we have the following story, and that story is that that the computer's been cranked up, Jeffrey.
It's been turned on?
It's been turned on. Yeah, well, if your lights flickered, Sam tells me that's not a thing. Elon Musk said XAI supercomputer started training in Memphis early Monday morning, July 22nd. In a post on X, the billionaire wrote, "Nice work by," whatever, "supporting companies getting Memphis supercluster training started at 4:20 a.m. local time." That's today, Jeffrey. That's today. That's what it sounds like, I think. With 100,000 liquid-cooled H100s on a single RDMA fabric.
I totally know what all that means.
Stick with me. It's the most powerful AI training cluster in the world. How about that? Supercomputer is running. That's fast, you know?
For
that
sure, totally.
That is fast. Evidently, by the way, it is not yet... this is what he posted to on Monday. He said, "This is a significant advantage in training the world's most powerful AI by every metric by December of this year." Join XAI to help build maximally truth-seeking and curious AI to understand the nature of the universe. So there you go. He's evidently, there's a Reddit thread that posted that Elon Musk's jet landed in Memphis over the weekend.
Okay.
So how about that? And maybe he flipped the switch himself, Jeffrey.
Turned it on himself.
I'd want to flip the switch.
Yeah, no, I totally.
Do you think
there's
a switch?
I have no idea.
A plug?
I mean, at some point you have to do something
there's
to
something
start it.
There has to be some trigger. There has to be something to start the damn thing. Exactly. So that has happened. It is not right now on our power grid. According
is it on
to
a generator?
This story. Yeah, they went on got one at Home Depot because he knows he's heard about some of the supercomputer expected to use 150 megawatts of electricity from MLG&W when it joins MLG&W's distribution system and TVA's electric grid. However, it is not on the grid now. Instead, the source close to the company has told the Daily Memphian the facility will run on natural gas turbines that have been rented and assembled at the site. The supercomputer is being cooled in the short term by trucked-in water on a closed-loop system, according to the same source. So there you go. We're up and firing. Does it feel different?
No, but it did kind of sound like it was like a... Maybe not like the type of generator we think about, but it sounded like it was a natural gas external source of power.
Yeah. Here's the thing. I'm just hopeful that it makes some significant economic difference to this city, obviously. That's why people are excited.
Yeah.
And I'm still a little murky on it. Whether it will, how it will, but still.
I'm still very much in the camp, though. I would rather have it than not.
Let's be honest. Which it took longer? Building the largest supercomputer in the world or re-signing Luke Kennard?
Building what's taking longer is re-signing Luke Kennard.
Luke, exactly right.
Yeah.
He built the biggest supercomputer in the history of history faster than the Grizzlies came to terms with Luke Kennard.
Well, still haven't, right?
Still haven't. Exactly right. Someone's got to flip that switch.
Correct. Someone's got to push that button.
Someone got to push that button. So, anyway, so you got to admire the speed with which this is getting done. And it is a big week for all kinds of reasons, Jeffrey. It really only dawned on me this past weekend that this is the week the Olympics start.
The only reason I know that's because I watched the British Open this weekend, and you couldn't watch 6 seconds without being bombarded with...
That's one of the reasons I found out, too. Right. And then I actually did Google opening ceremony.
I believe it's Friday.
Friday. Opening ceremony is Friday, but there are events. This always happens. The other reason I know is my reporter friends. Teresa Walker, for example, who writes for the AP in Nashville. And the AP, of course, covers the Olympics extensively. And so Teresa's always deployed to the Olympics. And so what happens is Danielle Lerner, who used to be a colleague of mine at the Daily Memphian, she went to Houston ultimately, where she's a reporter. She's going to. And so these people are posting up on Facebook, hey, heading to the Olympics, wish me luck, or whatever. Teresa's off in Spain, I think, having a little bit of a pre-Olympic R&R. But anyway, so they'll be descending on the Olympics. That's the other reason I know. That's Friday. The events take place starting, I think, Wednesday, honestly. There is actual Olympic competition. So, prepared to be immersed in the Olympics. So we got XI computer running. Mm-hmm. I think that was the noise I settled on. We got the Olympics firing up on Friday or before, depending on how you measure. We've got a brand new presidential race, as Joe Biden announced yesterday that he would be stepping down. It feels like Kamala Harris will replace him, partly because it feels like all the other potential candidates are not making themselves candidates, right? And so there are those on the Democratic side who have said they'd like to see an open process. Lots of people have already endorsed Kamala Harris. Some people have not yet endorsed Kamala Harris and might prefer some sort of a process to pick to pick the next Democratic flag bearer. But there's not going to be a process if someone else doesn't put themselves forward, and it doesn't feel like anyone will. It feels like it's going to be Trump versus Harris. Trump will still be favored in that matchup, but there we are. If that's interesting to you, it's certainly interesting to me. It's not the show on which we talk about it a whole lot. And then we got the Grizz plan for a world championship tonight, Jeffrey. Thrilling stuff.
Is it a world championship? I guess it's the World Summer League Championship.
Yeah. Before I get to that, I got to tell you what happened over the weekend. You know I have these dogs, right?
Yes.
We love our dogs. Obviously, you lost Carly last week. And I started getting these Bernese Mountain Dog puppies when I got divorced, honestly. And I had three little boys, and I wanted something soft in the house, you know? And something soft and cuddly. And so I got...
What would be easier than having three boys? Let's put puppies into the equation.
I got one puppy at first, Libby. Mm-hmm. Libby, and she was the perfect, like, Peter Pan, you know, dog. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, yeah. The kids spend half their time with their mother, but half the time in my house, they, you know, I'm not much on hugging and stuff. And so,
Here, hug the dog.
Libby every night would get on Peter's bed and sort of tuck him in. It was just, she's my lifetime dog. But anyway, after that, I had Juno. And after that, I had Willow. And then I got Gus. Gus is the first boy that I've had. And he's a giant.
Gus is a very big boy.
He's 100, certainly 120 pounds. But he looks, no one can believe he's only that big. They think he's 160 pounds. He is a giant. And Bernese Mountain Dogs are loving creatures. I told you before that the one time that my house was broken into, this current house, people came in, they overturned everything, every drawer, every mattress, every whatever. And what was depressing to me was that they didn't take a damn thing, because I have nothing of value. But also depressing is I know my dogs who did not then include Gus, just showed them around, right? Like, they're like, what do you want to see? Oh, we like it up here too, right?
Just remember the treats.
Well, Gus has a giant bark. Like, giant Hound of the Baskervilles bark. And he is a giant dog. And when I was away Friday, he bit someone.
Oh, no.
Actually.
Like, bit or nipped? Do we break the skin?
Let me show you. You tell me.
All right.
And not only this, he bit someone we know.
Okay.
Hold on. I'm sending you to this.
Sometimes that can work in your favor, though.
I'm going to make some excuses for Gus here in a minute.
Give some reasons.
But here we go. Ready? We're not going to put this fixed picture out because it's medical information. I couldn't possibly tweet this. But has the photo come through?
Was the bruise there before?
No, the bruise is all Gus.
Okay. This is a tough look. I will acknowledge this is a tough look, but I need more information.
Well, first of all, Gus bit someone we know. Who do you think he bit?
Your wife?
No. He did not bite Claire.
John Martin.
He bit John Martin.
Yeah.
Gus bit John Martin.
Okay.
Okay. And here, Gus bit.
It's a tough start.
Now, in fairness, there are people out there in Radioland applauding. Right? Like, if they had to choose.
I'm not here to encourage
there
that.
Are some people, if they had to choose between Gus and John Martin, would choose Gus.
I think that's more than fair.
Right? I mean. I'm not here approving that. And I say this, I've never had a dog that bit someone. And I'm like, holy crap. And there is a real sense of, oh God, embarrassment and shame and whatever else. But here's what happened, okay?
All right.
And you tell me.
We need the whole story.
John was going over to our house.
Okay.
I wasn't there yet. Claire was in the kitchen, and John just came
barging in
the back door.
Okay. A back door.
So like came from barging in the back up, came up the back stairs, came barging in the back door, and
so all I'm here right now so far is he's asking for
and
it.
He's wearing a hoodie.
Just saying.
Gus, who protects Claire.
Correct.
Sees this person. Now, he has met. It's a little tough because he has met John before. But he sees this person in a hoodie busting in the back door. And what does he do? He just reacts and bites him on the shoulder, which is honestly what he's supposed to do. I'm going to use, if this came to some sort of a prosecution, I would use the stand your ground law. Listen, in Memphis, Tennessee, you can shoot someone in your house. Surely you can bite someone in your house. He wasn't out on the street biting people. He wasn't biting people in a dog park. He bit someone who was an intruder into his house.
Yeah.
What more could you want from a big dog?
To me, it's like, what is the more unusual behavior? John going through the back stairs.
John would actually, like people
like,
who
why
know
not
me.
Go through the front
people
door?
People who know me often come in the back. I mean, that is true. People do come in the back. But typically, they'd knock, and Claire would go open the door, and
yeah,
and that way, like, immediately, he was like, oh, you're cool. Like, Claire likes you? Never mind. You're fine. And then he wanted to snuggle up to John. He's a loving dog.
I think if John goes through the front door, he doesn't get bit.
I don't know about that. I think if John goes through the front door unannounced, he might also get bit.
But if John would have just...
If John had knocked and waited...
Correct.
There is no way he would have been bit.
So all I'm hearing so far is the behavior...
But he was bit! Like, and he was... And I gotta hand it to John. He hasn't made me feel too bad about it.
Yet.
He hasn't... he hasn't threatened...
He does have a three-hour radio
he
show.
He hasn't threatened a lawsuit yet.
Uh-huh.
He hasn't tried to have Gus put down yet.
Uh-huh.
And he hasn't... And he hasn't even made me feel, although he does send me updated photos every day. So maybe he is sort of making me feel bad about it.
I think there is behavior that John could have controlled and changed that would have changed the outcome.
And here's the truth, though. Like, Willow, he could have done it. Like, Willow never would have bitten him. Like, no other dog I've ever owned, even in that circumstance, would have bitten the person. Carly wouldn't have either, right?
No, Carly would have barked really loudly while hopping backwards. Like,
exactly.
Like, Carly
Gus
would say,
is like, I'm a boy dog. I'm a protector. Like, this is, and Claire was, Claire and I have discussed this subsequently. She thinks that the fact that she was right there made it even more true.
Protective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, Gus sits with his back to us looking out at the world. That's what his protecting us. That's
yes.
The good news is, as John said,
he's Mustafa.
He said, you know how Mufasa. You used to tell that story about people could come into your house and your dogs would show them around?
Yeah.
You don't have to tell that story anymore. You got a killer.
If Claire's there.
You got Cujo.
If Claire's there.
Yeah. I wouldn't risk it with Gus anyway now. I will say.
Now that you've told that story, I go through all the memories I had with my dog. One time when our house got broken into, and the same thing, you know, they threw the couch cushions everywhere. I don't even remember where they got. I think maybe they got, like, my brother's laptop or whatnot. But, I mean, the reason we knew something was up was when we came back from dinner, Carly was, like, in a closet, like, terrified.
Well, that's the thing. And that's, I mean, the truth of the matter is I don't really want a fierce dog. But in some ways, it's not the worst thing in the world to have a dog that will bite an intruder.
Especially when your wife's there alone.
That's kind of the job.
Yeah.
That's kind of the job. But I apologize to John on behalf of Gus. And
I'm just saying, maybe John will learn front door next time.
I think it's wait to be introduced, whatever door you're coming in or a window for that matter.
Who's wearing a hoodie in the summer in Memphis?
It's honestly a good thing he was. Because if he wasn't...
He would have gotten straight to the skin?
He would have gotten...
But what if Gus would have recognized him sooner?
I think it's a good thing he was wearing a very thick very thick sweatshirt because he took a chomp out of him. All right. We do have other matters to discuss. Memphis Grizzlies go for a world championship.
How fast did that bruise start?
Go for it. It looks worse yesterday than it did Friday. I'll say that. Grizzlies go for a world championship tonight against Khalil Ware and the Miami Heat. Okay, it's not a world championship exactly, but it's a Summer League World Championship. This would be their third, first since 2019.
Would that be a record?
Thrilling tilt yesterday as they defeat the hated Clippers.
Mm-hmm.
Do we even hate the Summer League Clippers?
Well, how long did it take you to figure out those jerseys?
Took a while.
Because I was like, wait, those are the Clippers jerseys?
Took a while. They're just trying to disguise.
Because at first I was like, are we
trying
playing
to
the
disguise
Wizards?
The fact that they're the hated Clippers? Because they didn't want to, you know, rile up the Grizzlies. Anyway, Kobe Brown goes to the line. They beat Kobe in the world for the world in the semifinals. 1.7 seconds to go. Chance to tie it up. Missed the second free throw.
Mm-hmm.
That's like a Darius Washington moment. He'll never get over that.
Yeah, I will say this, though. As my wife and I were watching, I was just yelling. I was like, please miss it. Please. not even from the sense of I need the Grizzlies to win. It's like I just did not want to sit around and watch overtime.
Right, exactly. At least our overtime is target score, though, and I do like that. Anyway, so tonight it is against the Heat. Sadly, as we know, Zach Edey has now been shut down. No Cam Spencer, no Zach Edey, no Jake LaRavia in that game. Scottie Pippen is trying. He's playing like it's a world championship. 23 points, 10 assists, 10 rebounds. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a triple-double. Only the sixth, astonishingly, only the sixth in Summer League history. How is that even possible?
I mean, my thing is, I feel like even if the Grizzlies lose tonight, he should still win MVP.
I think so. He's like Jerry West.
Yeah.
You know? Honestly, the best part, though, because whatever you think of Scottie Pippen, I think it's been proven. He is a great third guard.
Yeah.
Right? And he might actually be a decent backup point guard. I don't think it's, I'll be honest, I know there's great enthusiasm for Scottie Pippen, and I think he's a credible NBA player, and he was last summer and everything else. I mean, last year, and he was continued that this summer. You know, he's not Tyus Jones, for God's sakes. You know, like he's not like, oh, we have a great backup point guard, or is at least not proven that yet. If he can still prove that, that's great. He's bullying people in summer league.
Yeah, which is what he should do
at age 23.
Well, and also, as Chris points out, typically guys that have success in summer league are usually undersized guards.
Right, so I love it as much as the next guy. I love his ferocity. I love the fact that he is, you know, let's be honest, is he burdened with that name or is he blessed with that name? But it is a lot to live up to, and he's not the physical marvel that his father was.
I think that helps you distinguish him.
I think that probably is right, but would he not like to be four inches taller?
But he would also, if he were 6'6", 6'7", he's, you know.
Yeah. If he were a better shooter, that would be great, too. But anyway, he is a fierce defensive player at his size.
Let's be real. If he's 6'6", he's probably not on the Grizzlies.
Right. So, yeah, they wouldn't be able to just pick him up for free.
Correct.
So he's a great player to have. Great. He is a great player to have on a two-way.
Yes.
And may ultimately be elevated onto the main roster this year. Good for Scottie Pippen. Gets the triple-double. But for me, the most fun yesterday was seeing Jalen Wells. Because that was a little bit of proof of concept there. Like, comes in, he's 6-7 from three. He's 9-12 overall. If he's going to make it, he is going to make it as a shooter.
Yes.
And that's what he was yesterday. And so the fact that we got to have these extra games because they made it into the postseason gave us a chance to see Jalen Wells. And that's got to help a kid. You know what I mean? Like, I think that every little bit helps that kid.
I would much rather have him see the ball go through the net than not.
Yeah, exactly right. GG 20 points. Anyway, tonight it's the Heat and Khalil Ware. The other thing that happened over the weekend as it pertains to the Grizzlies is they traded Zaire Williams. Zaire Williams with a two is now headed off with a second round pick, is now a Brooklyn Net, and it's to save money so they can sign Luke Kennard. And so we have the Zaire Williams experiment is over. I'm going to just go ahead and presume they'll get the Luke Kennard thing hammered out pretty clearly now. We should ask Chris Harrington about this, obviously, at straight up at 10 o'clock. It was kind of interesting. Did you see Sam Hauser for the Celtics, shooter for the Celtics?
45?
4 years, 45.
I think this is true. I think Sam Hauser's first extension was bigger than Steph Curry's. Because I think Steph's was 4-4.
Is that right? 4 years, 45 for Sam Hauser. So maybe that's the going rate for a shooter. Anyway, we'll see what happens there. The Zaire Williams thing, is this the biggest mistake this administration has made?
To me, it's this or justice.
And justice was pretty... Here's the thing, though. It is interesting. You look at that draft, the 2021 NBA draft, the first round, and you've got Cade Cunningham 1, Jalen Green 2, Evan Mobley, who just got paid over the weekend, 3, Scottie Barnes 4, Jalen Suggs 5. Those are, like, Jalen Green, jury's out. Right? Like, whatever. He had a better year. But those are fine.
I mean, I feel like with Jalen Green...
Jalen Suggs was a bust early. is not what people hoped he would be. But whatever. You know. Then you got Josh Giddey, who's already been dealt.
Yep.
Right? Jonathan Kuminga, who is a real prospect. He had a good year.
Yeah, but I mean, he's like, his coach hates him. And he hates his coach.
Well, I think they got over that. I think that they, at one point, midway through the year, but then he got playing time after that. I think he's a... Listen, you'd be very happy if the Grizzlies had gotten Jonathan Kuminga with that pick.
Well, yeah.
This idea was is that there's a bunch of wings, 3-and-D guys or whatever, wings who are in this draft, and we'll be happy with any of them. Because as you recall, the Grizzlies made this trade to move up in the draft before they knew who he would have been available. It was not a draft night deal. So then you got Franz Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, Giddey, even though he's imperfect and now has been dealt, he would have been a hit with the Grizzlies, right? I mean, that's clearly better than Zaire. Jonathan Kuminga, dramatically better than Zaire. Franz Wagner, dramatically better than Zaire. Davion Mitchell, eh. So then you got Zaire at 10. That's where they got him. Now, again, maybe the mistake was making the trade. Of course, Steven Adams is a big part of the deal. Maybe the mistake was making the trade before you knew who was available.
Yeah, right? I mean, to me, like, if you want to criticize the deal, it's you're making a draft night move before draft night.
Right. Why not wait and see if Franz Wagner is there?
Yeah. I presume, as you said, part of the other parts of the deal would have gone elsewhere.
But what's interesting is the guys traded. Normally, you think, okay, who could have, like, let's see who was drafted around when he was after he was drafted, who the Grizzlies could have had.
Yeah.
And it's a bunch of crap.
No, I mean, the only thing is, I think, what, Trey Murphy's at 17?
Right, Trey Murphy,
and so that's seven
Trey
spots
Murphy
later.
Was picked with the actual pick, with the Grizzlies' actual pick. And so, yes, clearly, in retrospect, they should have stayed at 17 and drafted Trey Murphy. I don't think it's fair to criticize a draft pick by identifying the one player who they could have picked that would have made more sense, unless everyone was saying pick that player. Right, you know what I mean?
Yes, like, and they were not.
I know Drew
had mentioned him because I remember
he mentioned it, but he would have been considered a reach, honestly, at 10.
It is so.
There are a bunch of players picked after Zaire Williams, James Bouknight bust, Josh Primo bust, Chris Duarte, Moses Moody. The jury's out. Kispert and Duarte all better than Zaire. That's true. Sengun, obviously a hit. But they just, Grizzlies weren't in the market for a big man. And then Trey Murphy. I, like, the guys picked immediately after him, Bouknight and Josh Primo. There wasn't a Jalen Johnson would have been great, but he won at 20.
I mean,
you know,
Bouknight and Primo together, of course, obviously.
No, they're terrible. I mean, Primo had his off-court situation.
Yeah.
So it was a whiff. And it was a whiff because it was a weird whiff because it was totally a departure from what they had done in the draft before. They picked a guy who had essentially no portfolio, who was all tools. He runs the floor well. He can get high. Maybe he looks, if you squint, like a guy who could develop into a 3-and-D player. He was not a guy who after the fact, Grizzlies didn't get high grades for that draft pick.
No.
And they went against the consensus in picking him. They reached for him, and he's a bust.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of, and there's just a lot of busts. And so if that's the worst that they have done, and I think it probably is, you win some, you lose some.
Yeah. To me, like, I want to be consistent because at the time they made the pick, we were discussing, like, would they go for the safer, more productive, like, two type, if you will, or would they take a swing?
And we want them to take swings.
100%. And I was like, at this point, like, take the swing and see if you can hit the home run. They didn't. Injuries also fit. I mean, he seems to be like, the only time he would play well is if he was playing with Ja, but, you know, getting them both on the floor at the same time was difficult.
Yeah. Do you think there's much chance he will come back to haunt?
No.
It is funny. You look at highlights of him at his best, and you see it. You know, when he's...
It's because it's flashy, because it's high-flying. But, like...
And then when he's stroking threes, you know, decent defensive play. Like, I actually think there's some chance. And I don't... He seems like a nice guy. I don't wish him ill.
No, the problem that I had on Friday is my, like, instant reaction when I saw the news is you give, like, a little fist bump. And I'm sitting there going... Why? Like, he's done nothing wrong. This isn't a situation where, like...
No, but there's no point in having him.
Correct.
It's better for him to not be rotting on the Grizzlies
bench.
Yeah,
but, I mean, the Grizzlies had to attach an asset to get rid of it.
Yeah. All right. Listen, we got Chris Harrington straight up at 10 o'clock. And then I am going to, while Chris is talking, I'm going to have been transported to the Liberty Bowl. And so then I will call in because they're doing the they're beginning their construction over there on the or the deconstruction the west side of the stadium. So we're gonna come back. We'll chat for this next segment. Then Chris Harrington, and then I'll report live from the Liberty Bowl. Maybe we'll see the. I don't imagine, Jeffrey. You don't think we're gonna see the wrecking ball, do you?
I don't know. I hope you will.
I hope I get to see the wrecking ball. In the meantime, if you have a big yard or a piece of land you're taking care of. Go see the smaller Case IH tractors at Mid-South Ag Equipment. Listen, shopping for a tractor is fun. Driving a tractor is fun. And you don't have to be a farmer to shop at Mid-South Ag. Case IH tractors with 140 horsepower or less. Exactly what you need for planting, for like, say, you have a big garden. If you got a big, you know, chunk of land to mow, if you're bush hogging, whatever it is, driving a tractor is fun, and the Case IH tractor is exactly what you need. Forget green. Go Big Red with a smaller Case IH tractor from Mid-South Ag Equipment. They're in stock right now. 0% financing. It's on Highway 302 in Byhalia. All right, back in a moment. It is the Jeff Calkins Show on a Monday, 92.9 FM ESPN. Back on the Jeff Calkins Show, I went to a couple out open houses yesterday, and I saw this one house that they just kept, you know. Now that at first they started showing the house, the folks had been there. Now they'd moved out. They keep lowering the price. They keep lowering the price. They keep lowering the price. And I think, oh gosh, what a difficult deal that is. Not so difficult if you call Josh Hysaw. I've been telling you about this woman named Sarah who has a big house in East Memphis. And she's thinking, you know what? I don't want to go through all that rigmarole. I'm going to call Josh. And I've heard about this instant cash offer that he does. And sure enough, gives him a call. He comes over. There's no open houses, no renovations, just a walkthrough. Within 3 weeks, she'd sold the house stress-free for cash. That is the way it can work with Josh Hysaw. It's why, if you head over to Google, you'll see he has more than 300 five-star Google reviews. It is Josh Hysaw and his team at Keller Williams, 901-461-8147, or joshhasthebuyers.com. Let's get this week started with a little, believe it or not,
now it's time for Believe It.
Believe. I don't even know if I believe.
Now I'm a believer.
Or not. Believe It or not. On The Jeff Calkins Show.
Well, Jeffrey, we mentioned the Olympics in the opening segment. Here's one. LeBron James, excellent flag bearer for the U.S. team.
Believe it or not.
LeBron James was, it was announced this morning, LeBron James will be first basketball player to be the flag bearer, first NBA player anyway, to be the flag bearer for the U.S. team.
Excellent. Okay, so he's still probably the most famous, correct? Because he's got to be bigger than Simone. He's got to be bigger than Ledecky. Who else would even... Am I missing someone obvious?
He is more famous. I don't know that he's in the Olympic realm. You got to give it to Simone, right? I mean
Ledecky's...
Simone or Ledecky, you would think, right? You would think. You want the list of past flag bearers? Summer last year was... It's funny, they seem to have three. Oh, no, that's Carrie. No, Summer was Eddie Alvarez and Sue Bird. So, basketball player.
Yeah,
not an NBA player. Okay, so that was last time, not last year. I'm not giving you the winners. I'm giving you the summers. Time before that, Michael Phelps. Simone Biles did the closing. Okay? The time before that, Marielle Zagunas. She was the archer. Remember that? Do you remember her? Do you remember? She's the archer. Before that, Lopez Lemong. I covered that one. And Lopez Lemong was a refugee.
Is this Beijing?
2008. Where was that?
I believe 2008's Beijing.
Yeah, he was a refugee who had made his way. I actually met and wrote his story. And a lot of times that's what it is. It's someone, Don Staley, 2004. We had Cliff Meidel. I don't recall his work. Bruce Baumgartner. Here's my only objection. My only objection is the Olympics aren't the be all end all for him, right? So, why in the world should it be? Shouldn't it be someone whose best work is as an Olympian, whose most famous work is an Olympian, who that's what means the most to them? And my only... So I would say no. I would say that is not correct. I would say that, believe it or not, no. Except for the fact that the athletes voted for him. So who am I to say?
Yeah, the problem, though, with any time it's LeBron now, everything just feels orchestrated. Like, this feels
I
like...
I don't think LeBron had a...
I mean, you could tell me Nike. I mean, Clutch. I mean, like, that's the problem. It's like
that's
everyone,
terribly cynical.
I mean, I think we at this point we deserve every right to be skeptical.
Hey,
of
at least
LeBron.
It's not Bronny.
Well, but I mean, what
it's
if that's
not Bronny,
what if, that,
the
what if that's 2028? What if that's the Olympics in L.A.? Bronny's hometown.
I mean, he is an incredibly famous. He does sort of represent this country, right?
I think he's probably still an iconic figure.
He's incredible wealth. What is America about at this point, if not about incredible wealth, fame, celebrity culture, you know, all of that.
Moving to L.A.
Moving to L.A.
Nepotism.
Nepotism. Yes. He got it all in one.
He really is
little
checking
bundle.
A lot of boxes.
Checking all the boxes. All right. SpongeBob turning 25 makes you feel old.
Believe it or not.
Are you a SpongeBob guy?
Yeah, SpongeBob's kind of more of like the, I'm a little bit older, but like I'm very aware of it, but I was not the watch it every day, but it being 25, yes, because my youngest brother watched it every day, and so now that's like, oh my God, if that's 25.
And what do we think about SpongeBob? I probably have not watched, you know, two full episodes, because it was, honestly... The weird thing is my kids are 25, you know?
Sure.
My kids are 27, 25. So I suppose that's something they could have watched. It didn't feel like we watched a lot of SpongeBob.
Yeah. I mean, it's still from the time when, like, Nickelodeon was still a massive part of, like, the kids' zeitgeist. And so SpongeBob, I mean, it's funny. But, I mean, it's also, it's like whenever you do a show for 25 years, there's, like, you just cycle in writers and whatnot and... It becomes more of like a institution than it does like some, like 25 years of SpongeBob is very different than 25 years of South Park, which is literally just the same show written by the same two guys.
You're going to see the movie Twister.
Believe it or not.
I do believe that because last night my wife asked, when are we going to see
really?
Twister? Well, my wife's got
it. So why are you going to see Twister? Why?
Because my wife's got it bad for Glenn Powell.
Oh, I see.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's reasonable.
Uh-huh.
So Twister.
Twisters.
Is that what it is?
This one's Twisters. The first one was Twister.
I see. This is Twisters.
Correct.
So that's how they made it. Episode that the sequel is they added a Twister.
I'm unclear if it's a sequel or a reboot.
What's weird is that Twister is one of those where it never struck me we needed another Twister. Right.
This story is one, felt complete.
This was one. It didn't feel like we needed another Twister. But evidently, America thinks we needed another Twister. It could just be because what's his name? This is
Glenn Powell.
Glenn Powell.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's very hot right now.
And then the woman co-star is also very popular, right?
Daisy Edgar Jones.
Yeah, she has a segment of devoted fans. But anyway, so it was predicted to do $50 million of business in the U.S. and Canada over the weekend. And last I checked, of course, I follow these things very closely, it was on track to do $80 million. And so the interesting thing is we always think we're learning big lessons about movies. Like we're learning, last year what we learned was America's sick of sequels, right? Because Indiana Jones didn't do well. Mission Impossible didn't do well. Ant-Man didn't do well. What did do well? Barbie and Oppenheimer,
yep.
Original films. And you're like, oh, I'm not an idiot. I got the lesson here. The lesson is America loves original films. And you stop rolling out the same crap,
mm-hmm.
right? This summer, what are we learning?
Well, sequels work.
This summer, it's the original films that aren't doing so well, and it's Inside Out is absolutely crushing it, and Twisters is absolutely crushing it, and then we got Deadpool. Is that the one that's coming out later this week?
Correct. Dune also came. Dune was a massive
hit.
Did
pretty well, yeah. So maybe it's not. Like, I never saw that Indiana Jones movie.
It was not,
people.
It
you
was
saw
not
it.
Yes.
It could be that America hates crappy movies.
Yes, I think that's kind of what the lesson
is. And likes good movies.
Yes, and we right? don't really fall for marketing.
And so that's kind of heartening. That's kind of heartening. Xander Schauffele is the best golfer in the world.
Believe it or not.
Oh, gosh. He has won two majors and two top tens, and that is rare air, ladies and gentlemen.
His major season was better than Scheffler's major season. The difference is, I think when Scheffler is at his best, he's better than Schauffele. But Schauffele has no real weakness. Like, if you look at every skill you have, he's at least top 40 at every massive skill. And with Scotty has a clear flaw. He really cannot putt. I mean, it's if he would have on Saturday, I think he shot 71, and I really honestly believe the highest score he could have shot was 71 because he didn't make a putt over 7 feet. It was his total putts hold was 46 feet, like 9 inches, which roughly translates to 2 feet. And so he made absolutely nothing, and Xander is a low-key awesome putter. On top of now, he has added speed, which means he's hitting it farther, which means he's got shorter clubs in his hand. He's hitting it closer. If you want to make the argument right now that Xander's the better all-round player because he doesn't have a clear weakness, I'm fine with that.
Did you feel bad for Justin Rose, who didn't do anything wrong, comes out,
no,
I think it's a 67.
I think if you would have told Rose, hey, I'll give you 67 on Sunday, I think he would have taken it.
And
100%. I think if you would have given Billy Horschel 67 on Sunday, I think he would have taken it. And that to me, like, that shows the difference because Xander shoots 65, and it felt like there was the moment on the par three where Rose gets up and hits it really close. Xander didn't hit it quite as close, but he still hit it close enough. Xander makes the putt. Rose misses the putt, and you're like, it is over. And that was, to me, like, that was the moment where you're like, okay, this guy's something different, because now I've never felt like that with Xander. It always has felt shaky. And he and his team, like, they've referenced, like, hey, you know, when the pressure got on, we didn't really rise to the moment. But this year, it's been a very different year. And now with the two majors, his career makes a lot more sense, like, when you look at it. Because when you looked at it before this year, you're like, this is a great player that when the pressure gets tough, he kind of doesn't get it done. But now his record really stands up.
So now we're going to have Olympic golf, and then we're going to have Memphis golf.
Correct.
How are you feeling about all that? Do you care about Olympic golf at all? It feels like that's one that no one cares about, really. But maybe.
Do like I watch it, but it, at the same time, it is not caught on, I think. I don't really love the idea of we added golf to the Olympics and we just added another four-day tournament, 72 holes.
How do you feel about adding flag football coming up?
I mean, I think there is an emphasis on growing flag football because, you know, football is a dangerous sport. And I'm someone who loves football. I don't think there's a great necessity to play tackle football until 7th, 8th grade. So if they want to emphasize that.
I don't hate it at all. I thought it'd be fun, too. Speaking of fun and not fun, Xavier Worthy is going to haunt me for the next 5 to 10 years.
Believe it or not.
I don't know if people saw this over the weekend.
The catch.
But the football highlight, obviously NFL teams are all reporting now. And the football highlight that was going viral yesterday. I was at a car wash, minding my own business. I was having to wait in line at the car wash the way one sometimes does. And by the way, do you ever get any of the things, the extra things they sell? Not at a car wash. And I was at an oil change place. I did the car wash. Then I crossed the street and did the oil change. Do you ever get the things that they try to sell you at an oil change? You
know, I mean,
hey, look at this filter. It's really dirty.
Yeah, when they try to upcharge you on the filter, mostly not. There have been a couple of times where it's like, I know just enough to know when I'm getting upcharged or
this is what happened to me before I get back to Xavier Worthy. So I'm at the oil change place and the guy says, oh, you've got a glove compartment filter or a dashboard filter or something. I had no idea this thing even existed.
Yes.
He goes into my glove compartment, folds it back in some secret Batman compartment back there, and there's a freaking filter in there. Do you know, are you aware of this?
No.
And it filters the AC stuff. All the filtration that goes into your car comes through this filter, at least in my minivan, that was hidden in the back there. He pulls it out, and I got to tell you, it's disgusting.
Yeah.
It's the idea that I would want to be breathing the crap that's on this filter is appalling. But I am wary of any time they pull out a filter and say, hey, do you want to do this? So I said to him, I said, could you just knock the stuff off? And he walks away for a minute. And then he comes back. He says, we're really not supposed to clean it. He said, but my manager says you can have $15 off. So then I said, how much is it? He goes, looks, $42. What do you think I did?
Yeah, you probably got it.
I said, put that thing back there. And then when I got home, I figured out how to open the thing.
And you cleaned it yourself.
And I basically cleaned it
myself.
Knocked
it off.
Knocked it off myself, yeah. Anyway, so in the midst of my day of chores yesterday, I'm innocently on Twitter or X, and there I see Patrick Mahomes going deep to Xavier Worthy, selected with the Bills' first-round pick. Now, mind you, that is a quarterback throwing the ball, who was selected with the Bills' first-round pick,
yeah,
throwing a perfect bomb to a receiver with 4.2 speed, selected with the Bills' first-round pick. And all I saw on Twitter was, thank you, Bills. 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 And I just wanted to skip this entire NFL season for fear of the torture that lies ahead.
Okay, so this would be my general stance. How are they going to haunt you any more than Mahomes already does?
If he completes that pass to Rashee Rice, I'm not okay with it. But it's like, listen, what is it? Once burned, shame on me. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, whatever.
Fool me once, shame on me.
Fool me twice,
shame on you.
How George Bush say? Put it another time, whatever else. So shame on me. And in the end, the Bills had done this before to calamitous results, and now they do it again. Think they're smarter, and it's just like in the end, I do think part of a franchise's obligations is to be gentle with the feelings of its fan base, to be respectful of the PTSD feelings of its fan base. And the Bills were not.
I will say
this. Is he going to be awesome? Who's going to be better? Keon Coleman, Xavier Worthy. Well, he was picked higher.
Well, if you made me bet, it's just because Worthy's faster.
Because the guy thrown to him?
No, because, I mean, I think highly of Josh. It's mainly because Coleman is a contested catch guy. And, like, what we've seen in the NFL, that's what works is guys that get open.
Stupid.
I'm going to say no, because he's not going to – I don't think he's going to torture you any more than Mahomes does in general. Like, I remember when Kadarius Toney was making catches in the preseason. Like, let's at least see something in a game that matters.
WNBA All-Star Game, the best All-Star Game.
Believe it or not.
I guess I don't believe it because that would require me. I didn't watch.
Yeah, I didn't watch much.
I mean, I will
but
say.
But it was competitive.
I mean, you have the All-Stars versus Team USA. I mean, that's at least that's an interesting matchup because it's competitive.
Well, and the All-Stars, of course, defeated Team USA, which is not really ignominious, really. It's listen, they're All-Stars. It is the best team that Team USA will face. Very clearly once it gets to the Olympics.
Team USA is more of a favorite in basketball, I think, than anything else, in women's basketball than they are in any other contest.
It is funny. We have been caught in women's soccer, just yes. For example. We have been caught, and my sense is we have been surpassed in women's soccer. We have not yet been caught in women's basketball. And we haven't been caught in men's basketball, but it's getting closer, as we discussed earlier in the show. Okay, here's what's going to happen now. I'm going to slip out, and I'm going to go over to the Liberty Bowl. And I'm going to – there's nothing like a wrecking ball, Jeffrey. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a wrecking balls are fun. And wrecking balls are fun when they indicate progress,
yes.
Right? When they're knocking down something beloved, not necessarily. Right, but when they indicate progress,
This is the perfect spot for a wrecking
ball. This is the best spot for a wrecking ball. So I'm going to go see the wrecking ball, and I will report back live from the wrecking ball site after you talk to Chris Harrington, get his thoughts on the pending Grizzlies title, on the Zaire Williams deal, and everything else. So we will do that next. Before then, I will remind you, it is the summer of 1,000 engagements at Robin Irwin Jewelers, and it's coming to an end. So 40%, up to 40% off engagement rings, and free vacations with every purchase of $24.95 or more. That means hotel stays in Myrtle Beach, Orlando, Las Vegas. That means three nights at a resort in the Dominican Republic, the Bahamas. That means a four-night Carnival cruise. They have all kinds of options over there at Robert Irwin Jewelers. So what you can do is get your up to 40% off engagement rings, have this wonderful free trip, $24.95, with any purchase of $24.95 or more. You can pop the question on the free trip. But this is coming to an end August 3rd. You know how back to school, we get to back to school too fast in this city, mm-hmm. Jeffrey? Summer ends. You know, summer does end.
You blink and there it's
you
gone.
You blink and it's gone. And over at Robert Irwin Jewelers, you got till August 3rd. You can check it out yourself. They got 5 convenient locations in Memphis and Little Rock, or online at rijewelers.com. Chris Harrington joins the show, and then we'll have an exciting report from the scene of the wrecking ball, all in the second hour. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Each and every day here on the Jeff Calkins Show, we welcome Chris Harrington to the program. Let's fire it up.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more. Presented by the Majestic Grill. Rediscover downtown dining. Chris Harrington on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris, what are we listening to?
That is One Summer Night by the Dan Lears. A little classic doo-wop as we wrap up NBA Summer League with a championship game this particular summer night.
We'll get to Summer League in just a moment, but of course the big news of at least Friday afternoon is that the Grizzlies have indeed traded Zaire Williams. The Grizzlies trade Zaire Williams as well as a 2030 second round pick via the Dallas Mavericks for, let's see if I can get it right, Mamadi Diakate and the draft rights to Serbian, it's Dang Bucic. He was the 54th pick in the 2014 draft. I think it's safe to say, Chris, I did not expect to see a 2014 draft pick or draft rights. That's quite the draft and stash. It seems to me that the bigger story is that the Grizzlies have indeed traded Zaire Williams. They also had to tag a second-round pick to move him.
Yeah, the players are unlikely. The other players are unlikely to mean anything in this trade. They paid a second-round pick to shave $4 million plus probably of salary off their books.
Yeah,
that's basically what happened here. I don't think the stash player will ever matter. I think it's highly likely that the player acquired from the Nets will not be on the roster when the season starts. If he is, he will not be on the roster past his guarantee date, his fully guaranteed date, which is sometime in January. He is the kind of player they could use, but he's not the player they could use. I mean, this is a guy who's like already 26, 27. He's played like 50 games for like four different teams over like 5 years. He's averaged like 3 points a game. It's not the guy. And so this is about two things, I think. One, primarily, it's about shaving salary and giving them the ability to, I think, someday re-sign Luke Kennard and not only be under the first apron, but be under the tax completely when they do so. And then it clears up some clutter, because if you're bringing Kennard back and you just drafted Jalen Wells and Cam Spencer and you still have John Conchar and you've got Vince Williams and Gigi Jackson and Jake LaRavia and Marcus Smart and Desmond Bain, that's just a lot of dudes sort of clustered around the same position. Zaire Williams has sort of run its course. He'd had 3 years to do something. He hadn't done anything. And it just seemed like the opportunity was no longer there for him in Memphis. So it's just not a guy you want having at the back of your roster who was a top 10 pick for you 3 years ago. So best to move on if you think the path is closed for him on your team. And then, you know, you got this money, you sign Kennard, and eventually you'll have a roster spot. And I don't know whether they'll fill that roster spot before the season, but I think they'll fill it before the end of the season. So you do give yourself some flexibility there.
I mean, to me, I know you've talked about this. I can see a case where they go in with just 14 guys, right? So that way you can give yourself some options.
I think that's likely at this point because given where the free agent market is. So that's a choice. They could have signed someone earlier, and then you look and say, oh, well, there's nobody worth signing, which is sort of true. I think it's not worth filling the spot unless there's someone who can fill it you think was really going to help you. And I'm not saying there's no one like that out there, but there aren't many. And so in the absence of that, it sort of probably makes sense to be able to have flexibility to pivot where your needs end up being if you have needs. And if you're fortunate enough not to have needs you need to fill in season, you have that spot right there to take in a player in a trade, to elevate a Scottie Pippen or a Cam Spencer onto the main roster, to do stuff like that. The likelihood is you're going to add, whether it's from your G League team or via trade, you're going to add someone to the main roster in the season. So you would already have a spot to put them in.
And there's no rush, right? I mean, to me, like when everyone's like, oh, well, move up Scottie Pippen Jr., it's like, okay, maybe that's something you can do, but there's no need to do that right now. That was kind of how I felt.
He's under contract. Like, he's under fully guaranteed contract. He can't go anywhere. And you have 50 games to play him on the contract he's on. So, no, there's no particular reason to do that now. There would be a reason if he's having a good season to do that, you know, A, because you run out of games, and B, you couldn't play him in the playoffs. And then see, it may be like a Vince Williams, Gigi Jackson, you want to lock him up for multiple years. So if you feel like, I guess the only thing I would say is that if there's a chance you could get him on, you know, that Gigi Jackson, Scottie Pippen, or the Gigi Jackson, Vince Williams contract now, but you feel like 50 games into the season, he wouldn't sign that kind of contract, maybe that's a reason to. But I don't think that's where they're at with it.
And then just kind of as you take a look at the Zaire Williams tenure in Memphis, I mean, is this their biggest draft mistake, this front office?
Biggest draft mistake? Yes. Yeah, you know, 10th pick. He's certainly the highest pick who has not worked out they've had. you know, is either biggest, you know, transactional mistake. You know, they took a big-ish swing on Justice Winslow. They used a lot of cap space to make that trade happen. They actually didn't give up any picks of note, you know, for it. But, you know, they took a swing on Justice Winslow in trade. They took a swing on Zaire Williams in the lottery. Those didn't work out, you know. Yeah, it is. But honestly, if that's the worst thing you've done in the draft, that track record's been.
When you look at that deal, was it a mistake to move up before the draft when you didn't really know how the board was going to fall?
Well, that was an odd trade because it was sort of this Frankenstein's monster of different genres of NBA trades sort of all pushed together, which made it hard to evaluate. You move up in the draft, but you also like switch centers, and that was an active thing. Like they thought that was an upgrade for them. It was not perceived that way at the time generally, but the Grizzlies were more interested in having Steven Adams on their team than Jonas Valanciunas on their team. So that was a component to it. You also like took on all kinds of salary. You also got what you thought was going to be a future first round pick, and like you sort of got screwed over on that because of the Lakers. So there were so many components to it. I do think it's true that there was a range of players. There's some like thought now that like they moved up because they thought they were going to get Josh Giddey or Franz Wagner. I don't think that's true. I think they hoped to get Josh Giddey or Franz Wagner. But I think when they moved up, they knew full well there was a good chance those guys would not be there. And so I think they moved up with full knowledge that there was a range of players and that they were going to get, and Zaire Williams was very likely that guy. So, you know, was it a mistake? I don't know. There were so many components to it. The Zaire Williams part was clearly a mistake. But, like, the Steven Adams thing worked out. And I think they had every reason to expect they were going to get a first-round pick from the Lakers. Everyone expected them to get that pick. And so, you know, there are just so many components to it. I have a hard time being animated about the mistake of it all, but certainly the Zaire Williams part was a mistake.
Well, and then to me, it's like, and I don't know if you know the answer, what if, you know, if you wanted Steven Adams, like you had to make the deal then, like, I don't, you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel comfortable saying one way or the other, like on the timing, like they maybe, to get the deal done, maybe they had to do it then because the deal could have gone to someone else.
Yeah, I don't know. The timing is interesting because usually a pick-related trade happens during the draft because it's contingent on a player. But like the next year, like the Grizzlies did a pick and went the other way. They were sending out the pick, not getting the pick. But their first round pick the next year they traded before the draft. It was in the Marcus Smart trade, right?
Yep.
And so sometimes if your willingness to do the trade is not contingent on one specific player with the pick that is involved in the trade, you don't necessarily need to wait. And that was the tell. That trade for the Grizzlies was not contingent on an individual player. They were willing to make that trade to move up in that range of the draft. It was not specifically about Franz Wagner or Josh Giddey or Zaire Williams for that matter. It was about they believed in that range of players. It turned out to be wrong because they, you know, Trey Murphy went the pick they traded with a similar kind of player. But like, you know, that the valuations are wrong all the time.
Do you think it's likely that Zaire goes on and has a good career? Because to me, one of the things that Mark and I used to talk about is a lot of the guys that we've seen in the draft that the Grizzlies send out, you realize, hey, the biggest role they're probably ever going to have in the NBA was with the Grizzlies. To me, it's like I can kind of see where Zaire falls into that category as well.
Yeah, I think it's hard to have faith in it at this point. You know, he's had 3 years, and he was not, you know, although he did not play much in college, he did play 1 year. He was not straight preps to pros. And so he's four years removed from his high school class. He's had lots of opportunities. He's had moments. Like he has NBA attributes, but like lots of guys who are not in the NBA have NBA attributes, you know?
Sure.
It's about putting them together to become a player. And I think with Zaire, even his best moments, I think were pretty overrated. I mean, I was sort of banging this drum his rookie year. I think people were way too excited about what he was doing his rookie year. It was sort of similar to David Roddy early in his rookie year. You know, he runs the floor. He catches lobs. He has some ability on defense as a guard. I think not as a forward because of his strength. You know, as with a lot of players, like, can you stay healthy and will you become a three-point shooter? Like, if you tell me he stays healthy and he becomes a good three-point shooter, I think he has a career. But it's hard to have a lot of faith in it to this point. I think it is a good situation for him to try to hit the restart button on that Brooklyn team.
Yeah, to me, it's like, even if he goes on to have a good career, I don't really fault the Grizzlies for moving on. Because, to your point, it's like, I would rather see Vince Williams get those minutes. Like, there's a crowd. And to me, it's like, the guys that I would play over him, I think, have earned the right. And so even if he goes on to have a good career, it's like, I tip my cap, wish him well. I don't think this was a mistake to finally move on.
No. I mean, the question would be, you know, there were different ways to move on, right? You could have stretched him and cleared the same money without giving up the future second round pick.
Yeah.
You could have just waived him and eaten the money now and not cleared the money. You know, you clear the roster spot, but you don't clear the money. You don't give up the second round pick. I mixed feelings about all that. I understand their interest in getting below the tax line once they're able to draft Zach Edey and sign Luke Kennard and still get there. But, you know, I don't love the idea of giving up even if it's a second-round pick and those are pretty fungible, I don't love the idea of just giving up a pick to clear the salary space. But, you know, it's a distant future second-round pick. You know, those can be reacquired pretty easily, so it's not that big of a deal.
Is there anything to make of the fact that it does seem one of the motivations, if not, I don't know if it's the primary motivation, but it certainly appears to be a motivation, is to get underneath the tax?
Well, I mean, they didn't have to move Zaire Williams in a salary dump trade to sign Luke Kennard. The roster spot's there, the money's there, they didn't have to do that. They only had to do that to sign Luke Kennard and get under the tax. I'm going to write more about this whenever this actually happens.
Yeah.
With Luke Kennard. I think the tax question for the Grizzlies is a somewhat interesting one. And there's a difference between what you're doing right now to stay under the tax, which is basically getting rid of your 14th man, and other opportunities that may emerge over the course of the season that may bring the question back up.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's some people like, see, they're being cheap. It's like, I don't know, like, if you had a proven championship roster, like, if you're Boston and you're saying, screw it, we don't care, like, I understand, but, like, when you're with the Grizzlies and you know that you're going to have to tweak the roster and you're a small market team, like, I just didn't find myself going, the fact that this team's not won a championship yet, like, I don't think this is some type of, you know.
Not to step on my home column, which someday we'll publish, I would be more animated about them ducking the tax if they were ducking the tax by saying, here's our new starting center, Andre Drummond, and hey, Jalen Wells is replacing Luke Kennard in the rotation.
Yeah.
Like, that didn't happen, you know?
I mean, I would be way more upset if I were a Nuggets fan. Like, it felt like to me what the Nuggets have done was, like, clearly cheap. Like, I don't feel like that these two things are the same.
They sacrificed a starter.
Yeah.
The Grizzlies sacrificed Zaire Williams.
Yeah, and to me, like, those two things are clearly different. Was there anything else from the move that struck you?
No, I'm just struck by, like, that the Kennard thing is not immediately followed. Like, I'm at the point now where I don't understand why it's taken so long. There's no indication whatsoever from anyone that, like, he's going anywhere else. Like, the market's done at this point. They've made their salary dump move. I don't at this point, I'm not sure why it didn't follow, like, 2 hours later, you know?
I mean, I guess if, like, Luke's on vacation or something, but I mean, like, we have PDFs now. Like,
right.
I don't.
Yeah.
Like, it is one of those moves, like, the longer it goes on, I find myself wondering, like, is this going to get done?
I think it is, both from my own information and from the total lack of counter information anywhere else. But I don't understand why it's taking so long.
I mean, the fact that Adrian Wojnarowski included in his story, the deal moves out $6.1 million guaranteed on Williams' contract for the 24-25 season and creates more salary cap flexibility as the Grizzlies work towards re-signing Luke Kennard. Like, that to me, the fact that was included,
this has been the thing from the jump since they declined Kennard's option, that this has been what the process is going to be. It's sort of long expected, has become long delayed at this point, but it still seems to be this is the track we're on.
We're talking with Chris Harrington, of course, of the Daily Memphian. The Grizzlies Summer League Bears continue to roll on. They defeat the Clippers 99-98 yesterday. Jalen Wells has what I would presume is by far the best summer league game he's had thus far. I can't think of another performance. But I was kind of thinking about
he had a similar game back in Salt Lake City. He had like a 27-point game or whatever back then. So he's had these two big games, and then he's been kind of quiet for the rest. Yeah.
I mean, to me, like even that Salt Lake City game where he shot the ball is after the dreadful performance. Like, okay, I think that's really kind of the real question is there a role for him on this team?
Well, I think your hope is there doesn't need to be a role for him on this team this season.
Yeah.
I think he's going to open the season as the 14th guy. I think you assume he opens behind Laravia and Conchar. You know, he is a second-round pick who was taken, in the late 30s. So you don't hope you're depending on that guy. But he gives you shooting depth. He's the kind of player who's, if he can play, is very functional. He's a 6'7 guy who can shoot. You can throw him out there in just about any kind of lineup. You know, if he pops, that's great. If he earns his way past those players, that's great. But I think this team should be constructed in a way that you are not depending on Jalen Wells to be a contributor this season.
Yeah, I mean, I like how you phrase it. It's like, you hope not. Like, you'd rather it be a developmental thing, and you hope that the guys that you have slotted ahead of him are performing better. I think the other thing I was thinking about was, has Scottie Pippen Jr., like, regardless of the result tonight, has he locked up the Summer League MVP?
Khalil Ware's had a really good Summer League. Some of these guys for the Heat.
Yeah.
And so, I'd have to look. It's interesting. I mean, has he locked it up over G.G. Jackson? I think if you've watched all the games, G.G. has been good and has been increasingly better. But if you've watched all these games, like I've watched all the Grizzlies games, like it's clear Scottie Pippen Jr. has been the MVP of this Grizzlies team in Summer League. I haven't watched games of other teams for the most part. So no, I was in the same boat.
It's like when people are saying, oh, he's going to be MVP, it's like to me, it's like he's clearly the Grizzlies MVP, but that would require me watching other games, and I've only watched Grizzlies games.
Yeah, I've just been glancing at box scores. I did look at this today. Of players who have played more than two games in Vegas, I believe G.G. Jackson is fourth in scoring average and Scottie Pippen is sixth, and they're basically like 1 point difference. Then you look at the rebounds and the assists and the steals and everything else Scottie Pippen Jr. is doing. I feel like he's probably been the best player in the Summer League. And if the Grizzlies win this game and he plays well, he should probably be the Summer League MVP. Yeah, and by the way, if you go back and look at the list, Summer League MVPs.
It's funny that you mentioned it because I found myself, because I was looking up this morning, I was pleasantly surprised. Like, there's some that maybe don't translate, but it's not like a worthless list. Like, guys that have been Summer League MVP have gone on to have good careers.
The only one, and there's a difference. For some reason, there's like MVP of the championship game, and then there's the MVP of the Summer League, which are sort of different lists. The MVP of the championship game is a little spottier. MVP of the league as a whole, I think the only one who did not have a meaningful NBA career was Glenn Rice Jr.
Yeah.
There's a lot of former Grizzlies on that list. Brandon Clark won it for the Grizzlies, but then before they became Grizzlies, Jonas Valanciunas, Tyus Jones, and Kyle Anderson are all former Las Vegas Summer League MVPs.
And our boy Jerry D. Bayless.
Yeah, that's right, Jerry Bayless. And so Josh Selby was a co-MVP 1 year. That didn't work out.
Yes, but he was with Damian Lillard. Worked out
right,
for them.
Right. How about that for a combo?
But, I mean, like, this list is certainly not a bad list. Randy Foy, Nate Robinson, Jared Bayless, Blake Griffin, John Wall, as mentioned, Dame Lillard, Josh Selby, co-MVPs, Jonas, in 2014, the aforementioned Glenn Rice Jr., but Kyle Anderson, Tyus Jones, Lonzo Ball, Josh Hart, Brandon Clark, Davion Mitchell, Cam Thomas, Keegan Murray, and then Cam Whitmore. Obviously, the jury's still out on some of those, but I was pleasantly surprised. Like, okay, this list is not as... I thought the list would have a little bit more volatility in terms of guys that had good careers, and for the most part, it's pretty solid.
Well, I think what makes it even more encouraging is that we've already seen him play really well. He didn't play a lot last season because he had some injury stuff, but when he played in the NBA games last season, he was really good. He looked really good in those games for the Grizzlies last season. And even though he's not like a rookie coming into Summer League, he's basically kind of rookie age. Like, he's not someone who, he's not Laravia, who's like coming in a third year and seems like too old to be there. I mean, he's not too much out of the range of these guys either. And so it's not a case of like, you're playing down. You shouldn't be there anymore. I think he should be there. And I think Scottie Pippen looks like a real legit quality NBA player. Now, is that you know, the 48th best point guard in the NBA, where you're like a slightly below average backup. It could be that, but even that's like, you know, a real player. Or maybe it's a lot better than that. Who knows?
When we get to the end of the season, do you think Scottie Pippen Jr. will still be on a two-way?
I'm going to say no, although they really like Cam Spencer.
Yeah.
You know? And so, but I just think there's so much more of a clear need for Pippen on this team that I think, A, they will have a spot to play with. And then, B, I just wonder about the Derrick Rose thing. Like, I think this will be Derrick Rose's last season as an NBA player, I'm going to guess. And once you hit March, like, I mean, you know, at that point, like, has the veteran influence, have you gotten enough out of it that you could use that roster spot for someone who's actually going to help you in the playoffs? I wonder about that.
Yeah, and I mean, to me, I mean, I guess there's, like, a real question of how many minutes is there a need in a playoff series for a backup point guard for the Grizzlies? I mean, like...
Well, their hope, if you look at the roster, we're assuming Kennard's return, their hope is that a 10-man rotation doesn't include either of those guys, honestly. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, they need... If they're going to find enough minutes for John Morant, Desmond Bane, Marcus Smart, Luke Kennard, and Vince Williams, all five of those guys... If they have all five healthy and they're going to find minutes for all five, that doesn't leave room for a Scottie Pippen Jr. or Derrick Rose.
What have you made of Trey Jemison so far?
I think he's been okay, but I'm not sold that he is the guy that they are going to have in that two-way spot when they get into the season.
Yeah.
Because I think they need someone in that spot who will be the front court Scottie Pippen Jr., the guy who is on a two-way but is not really a developmental player. They are a depth player for the Memphis Grizzlies. And I just don't know if Jemison is ready for that yet. I wonder if he's not a developmental tweener, not a positional tweener, but a developmental tweener, where he's too raw to be a depth player for the Grizzlies, but maybe a little bit too old to still be a developmental guy.
Yeah.
And so I like him, and I think he's played well, but he is not overwhelmed the summer league or anything.
When you talk about, you know, the two-way guy at that role, do you like foresee a situation kind of like how the Grizzlies got Scottie Pippen, where there's another guy that maybe somebody moves on from or whatnot, and then they pick him up that way?
I assume they will keep their eyes wide open for those opportunities. You know, who's going to shake out of summer league that, like, you know, is not on a roster that they think can help them, or even more so, who's going to shake out of training camps? Because you can go into like year four and still have two-way eligibility. So there might be somebody like, you know, I wouldn't want to make up names because I don't know. But there could be guys who, you know, were drafted 2 years ago and they've been bouncing around the bottom of rosters and they just get cut. The last guy cut on somebody's, you know, training camp roster. And then you think they can help you more next season. So I think they will keep their eye. I'm guessing they will keep their eyes open for those kind of guys.
Chris, we really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks.
That is Chris Harrington of the Daily Memphian. When we come back, let's figure out whether or not Jeff has seen a wrecking ball yet. He went out to watch the beginning of the demolition of Simmons Bank Liberty Stadium. We'll talk to him all about it when we come back right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
So I was out at the Liberty Bowl, and when I'm out at the Liberty Bowl, I know I'm kind of in public, and I got to look decent. So what do? Reach for the Oak Hall stuff, of course. I mean, like, I have the Oak Hall pants that I wore that I got married in, and I got the Faraday shirt that I love, sort of light blue stripes. It's just stunning. And I feel good wearing the stuff. I actually feel good. I look good. And here's the thing. Right now, the summer sale is in full swing. So you can get things like this Faraday shirt for 30, 50, up to 70% off throughout the store. No better time than right now to get in to see our friends at Oak Hall. Clothes are magnificent. The secret sauce is the people. You walk in there. And they will—they'll point you in the right direction. They'll tell you what will make you look your best. And again, right now, no better savings than during the summer sale: 30, 50, up to 70% off throughout the store. All right, Jeffrey, I do want to report from the scene. I was there. I've tweeted out video, I do believe, and it may be sexist of me to say this, but every 6 or 7 year old boy in the city should be here watching this.
Yeah, with the power tools and the crane. Yeah,
great. Yes, great. I had to ask, because this is not my area of expertise, I had to ask what I was watching. And these are excavators, but they're not excavating, really. They're not digging, right? They're excavators, and they have, just like your vacuum cleaner, basically they're just giant-ass vacuum cleaners, just like your vacuum cleaner has different attachments you can put on them.
Yeah.
They have different attachments. So there's 3 big-ass machines. I think that's the formal name.
Mm-hmm.
3 big-ass machines. 2 of them have, they're like woodpeckers. They got this thing on the end that's just banging away at the side of the Liberty Bowl. And then one of them is a lobster claw, which is like it sounds. It's a claw that sort of tears at the side of the Liberty Bowl. And it is kind of dramatic. Like, I wondered, what's the point of me going over there? Is it just a photo op? And the truth of the matter is, largely, like, we had Jeff Crane on last week talking about this phase 2 was going to get started. And so they want to let people know what's happening, both because there's going to be some dust when the games start, but because capacity is going to be reduced, and they're also trying to create some excitement. So for all those reasons, they wanted to get the word out. And so they staged this deal as a pretty clearly, it's a made for TV highlight event, seems to be what it was for. I don't think, if you just listened to the press conference, you didn't learn much more than you learned listening to Jeff Crane with us last week. But it was good video. So I wonder what was the point to be out here. But there is something stirring about watching a structure that has really been an important structure in Memphis, at least parts of it, come down. You know, it's just they are tearing down that west side of the Liberty Bowl. And it started shortly after the press conference today. And, yeah, there's a live cam on it over at the Go Tigers Go site, I think. There's also video that people are tweeting out. I've tweeted it out, some video of it. So it was sort of ceremonial. Jeff Crane spoke, then the mayor spoke, and then the machines started doing what the machines do. So they will be at this, he said, for about 3 weeks of tearing stuff down. So that'll be kind of fun. He said that that it will be, let's see, how many tons did he say?
I think he said 25,000.
He said 25,000 tons. He said, I have it written down somewhere.
Yeah,
a lot of tons.
Munns says, Crane says 25,000 tons of concrete. So I guess 50,000 pounds of concrete will come down.
And he said the same as if you were to weigh it, yeah, 25,000 tons of concrete will come down. He said it's going to create quite a mess. And then they did the math. That is the equivalent of 116,000 tigers.
Mm.
Now, the thing about that, though, is the tigers splattering, like 116,000 tigers, that would either create a mess or you'd have to think it would be a danger to the people of Memphis, right?
Yeah, I would think so.
116,000 tigers loose on the city. So anyway, so that's kind of...
That would probably be the bigger story, I think, if we're being honest.
It would be bigger. And you wouldn't want the small boys all there gathered around as 116,000 tigers were loosed. But right now, I think people... It is sort of fun to see it. Now, other things I did learn. One is, I am curious... Again, not for selfish reasons. I don't really cover sports as much anymore from a day-to-day perspective, so I'm not going to be in that press box as much. I'm curious what that press box is going to be like, because it's impression. Yeah, well then, you know.
Hold on, we lost you. Go back to, you're wondering what that press box is going to be like.
I'm wondering what it's going to be like, because it creates a first impression for out-of-town media, which then describes Memphis to their people. So... I'm not sure I have that high aspirations for it. I'm told it will be worlds better than the current one. So there's that. So,
I mean, there's also the reality of this year, you know. I mean, the home schedules, you're not exactly inviting in, you know.
No. That's true, too. The second thing is, what's really kind of interesting is, if you look at the what the West Side will be, and this is for the start of the 26th season, so not this year, not next year, but the next year, they expect it to be finished. They'll have the seats that they're going to leave in now, up to row 25, right? Then behind it is going to be this giant-ass party deck, right? Which is sort of interesting. I haven't ever seen... I've seen party decks in end zones, right?
Sure.
And in corners of end zones. I'm not sure I've ever seen a party deck that stretches, you know, from the 20 to the 20 or wherever this one does. It will be...
I think UCF has one.
Is that right? It will be a different feature. And I think cool. It will be interesting, though. Like, for people who want to sit and watch a game at the 35, right, you're either going to be in the lower 25 rows or you're going to be on the other side, you know. So it'll just be interesting. You're then going to have a premium seating tower. But what phase three is, and I didn't realize this until I was looking at the diagrams and the pictures and whatever. Phase three is a seating deck that comes in above the party deck.
Yeah.
So the party deck will still be there, but it will be another basically 5,000 seats sort of that will create a roof for the party deck, and it'll look more like a conventional stadium, which is, you know, from boxes to field, it will be in seats. And it's funny, when I was looking at the diagrams, Steve Earhart comes over and he says, that's critical, because there's still some back and forth about capacity here. Right.
Sure.
And like Steve thinks that 32,000, even for this year's Liberty Bowl, is not adequate. And once the idea is they're going to start putting in more seats, they will start expanding the seating capacity as the project goes along, and the hope is that by the Liberty Bowl, they're up over 32,000. But there's been very clearly no commitment to that. So that bears watching, because that could be a source of some a dispute going forward or push and pull. I also did learn, I wrote the story about with the flag coming down, and I learned they haven't decided exactly where they're going to put it. But it appears one of the things that they're really contemplating is putting it in the party deck, basically making it a display in the party deck with a storyboard sort of explaining that this flag has been flown since 1911 or whenever it was, and it only has 45 states, 45 stars, because it was made at a time. It's so old, it's older than five states, which is why it has 45 stars. So the current thinking is to put it there. Now, it would not then be visible as you drive past to the, you know, which is the current one was, but that seems to be what they're thinking. So that's sort of the news from the stadium. I don't know. I didn't expect there to be a lot of quote unquote excitement about it, but I think there is. I think there's some real excitement about it. And I think, you know, you start with all the work that was done to get this far. Like, it's really hard at a place like Memphis. You know, it's not rolling in money. And so it took Fred Smith, and it took the state, and it took the university, and it, you know, a lot of people working hard on this to make, you know, this happen. And so it's a momentous day from that perspective. I guess the question I would ask Jeffrey is, you know how when you're a beginning sports writer and you're reaching for the cliches, mm-hmm. and occasionally you'll see someone say, and you wince every time you see it, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Yeah.
Right? That's one of the great cliches.
It was a tale of two halves.
For Memphis, for the University of Memphis Athletic Department, it is the best of times and it is the worst of times. Is it the best of times, or is it the worst of times? Which can you make a stronger argument for? That it's the best of times because there's incredible, you know, there's progress finally on the football stadium, right?
Sure.
The football program is doing well, seems to be broad success across the athletic program. The university is now a tier one research institution, like all of that. On the other hand, the gap is growing wider and wider and wider. Today, I think there was news, or maybe it was Friday, Ross Dellinger said that the SEC schools are going to be paying $15 million in payroll in addition to NIL. That's what he expects it to settle at after the House case. We'll see. I don't know if the commissioner at the AAC Immediate Aid has addressed this yet. We'll see if they're going to end up paying anything, or even allowing their institutions to pay anything at AAC Media Days. And so you've got these, you know, Power Five programs that are getting massive checks and are dramatically richer than you are, and you're scraping to do everything you possibly can to raise this money for a football stadium. So is it the best of times, or is it the worst of times? I think Charles Dickens would want to know.
Yeah, I mean, I think the case for the best of times is, it does feel like, relatively speaking, to the teams that you compete against, you're maximized at a level that you probably never have been with the NIL money, with all of this. But the real question is, like, to me, it's, you know, when you talk about Dellinger's stories, also when you start to see, like, okay, we're now starting to see real action being taken to separate, you know, the power schools from the non. Is there still the opportunity to move up?
They don't even play anymore. Yeah, they won't even play them anymore.
That's the real question. Is there going to be an avenue for Memphis to move up?
And it just feels like there is a feeling of watching this. There is a feeling of excitement and a feeling of, what the hell? Why are we just doing this now? You know?
Really? Yeah, I mean, there is like the real question of, okay, is this, you know, 15, 20 years too late? And I don't know.
Right.
I mean, the reality is the ACC is very volatile, and I think there's maybe some denial about how volatile it is. Like, is that a working possibility?
What, by the way, do we think about? There is, in the TV contract in the AAC, which we know goes through 36, is that right? 30 when?
30. The ACC is through 36, but there's also
right.
ESPN has an option.
That's what I was going to ask you about. So they have this look-in where they get to just bail out of the thing if they wanted to.
Correct.
Right? Why would they? If it is so cheap that every ACC school is like, I'm not sticking around for this measly payout, why would ESPN think about getting out of a contract that benefits them, because they only have to, they have to do that measly payout? It presumably is a good deal for ESPN.
I mean, it's a good deal if you have the ACC as it is, but if you're in a situation where you're paying $36 million to have Boston College Pitt, well, that's not something you're interested in. And now you've been playing, you know, you're paying way more money now for the NBA. You've got all these other, you know, you got these, all these other cash considerations. Maybe you just decide, all right, screw it. We'll be done with it and just not have to pay it.
Yeah, I don't know the legalities of it. And I guess I wonder if, let's say they did the look in and say, yeah, we like this, we're going to stay, and then subsequently Clemson and Florida State leave. Isn't there some of the provision in the contract that would allow
right?
Them to
they would reevaluate
as well. Yeah, like I got out of so anyway. I guess the right thing to do is to look on the bright side and to say, listen, you can't. And this is true in life. You can't lament what you didn't do 5 years ago or 10 years.
Sure.
I mean, you can if you want, but it's not.
It does. It's not productive.
It doesn't get you anywhere. All you can do is control what you do today, tomorrow, and the next day. And that's what the university has done. And so from that perspective, I think you have to celebrate this day when the Liberty Bowl is at least starting to come down. Again, over the next 3 weeks, there's going to be some rubble over there. So be prepared. They're firing water at it. They're spraying water to keep the dust down.
There we go.
So it's quite a scene. Before we go, I do want to remind you, if you're looking for a new financial institution, if you want a home loan, if you want a car loan, if you're just fed up with your bank, check out Leaders Credit Union. Exists only for the benefit of its members. And so every penny that they earn is poured back into better rates, better technology, better service. And we put our money where our mouth is. Claire went and opened an account not long ago at the Bartlett branch. They have tremendous online banking. They will be opening up
in Arlington. They broke ground on that recently. It is Leaders Credit Union. I couldn't be happier, honestly, with Leaders, including right now special 5% checking account special, no monthly fee, no minimum balances. Again, it's Leaders Credit Union, leaderscu.com, ESPN/ESPN. Jeffrey, what is coming up next on 92.9?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jason returns to the program. Jason Fitz will join them today. Norton Hurd's going to be my guest this week on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jason Munns will join us during the 2 o'clock hour. It's Monday, so that means David Cobb will join Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Got to get out of here. Back tomorrow for Now Work Is Done.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
There's sports betting, and then there's Circa Las Vegas, an adults-only sports watching nirvana. Now you can watch up to 19 games at the world's largest sports book on a 78-million-pixel, three-story mega screen. Plus, it's always spectator season at America's largest pool amphitheater, Stadium Swim. Stadium Swim is open 365 days a year and features all sports on an epic 143-foot screen. Book your reservation at CircaLasVegas.com. Circa Las Vegas, this is sports the way it should be.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.